Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Let's talk some NBA to start. Somehow the Kyrie Irving drama has jumped yet again, and it's widening. It's no longer about Kyrie shifting from asking about saunas and drinks, allegedly, to suddenly talking about not restarting the season and somewhere along the way starting a new league of his own. It's more than all of that because Kendrick Perkins has entered the arena and the big fella is not having it with Kyrie. So you can put Perk firmly in the camp that believes that Kyrie is being disingenuous when it comes to being a force for positive social change. Earlier in the week, Perk went in and said this to ESPN Radio.
This was the same guy about 10 days ago that came out and said that he wanted to join the team and be in Orlando around his team because the agreement was that inactive players couldn't go because there was only a certain amount of people that could be in the bubble. Now, what changed over the last 9-10 days? What changed was, from what I strongly believe and what I heard, is that the NBA and the Players Association told Kyrie that, no, you can't go. How can a guy's mindset change in 10 days? George Floyd was murdered on the 25th of May. They started protesting the next day. They started rioting the next 2 days. Kyrie mindset just 10 days ago was he wanted to go to Orlando. What changed since then? What changed was that they told him he couldn't go.
Credit ESPN Radio. So Perkins is saying it's not so much about his social consciousness. It's about the fact that he wanted to go to Orlando and they told him, Kyrie, that he couldn't go to Orlando. And that's why he changed. That's what Perk had to say earlier in the week, and he has not let up. He went on ESPN, and then he dropped this as well.
If you take Kyrie Irving's brain and put it in a bird right now, guess what that bird is going to do? It's going to fly back. Because Kyrie right now, he's confused. He's showing his lack of leadership. Here it is. Kyrie, you have been on these conference calls over the last 2 months. You're the vice president of the Players Association. You have been very involved in all this that has been taking place for us, whether or not we're going to play or not. And you have been on the phone and you have voted to play.
So he was just getting started. He also made time to call LeBron James, quote, the most athletic player in NBA history, end quote. Only for Bill Russell himself to come from the rafters and dunk on him by reminding Perk that Russell was not just an NBA legend, but he also could have made the U.S. Olympic team as a high jumper. That's fine. That's well and good. That's true. But Perk kept right on rolling, and then he went back to go after Kyrie on Twitter. Quote, excuse my last tweet, but I really took it light on Kyrie today because I really could expose the cupcake BS that he's really doing behind those phone conversations. Carry on. Yeah, I'm not even sure exactly what that means. I'm not sure what he's getting at there, but this is spilled over from a former player, turned media member, talking about labor negotiations into something that has gotten really personal, deeply personal. And now another challenger is sprinting into the ring. There's a third man in now, and as you might imagine, that third man is Kevin Durant. KD retweeted a tweet clowning Perkins, complete with Perkins firing an air ball as a member of the Thunder. Durant went on Instagram and called Perkins a, quote, sellout, end quote. So there's your third man in. Now, of course, that weird relationship between Durant and Perkins is nothing new. That's a dynamic that's truly strange to figure out. Former teammates turned Twitter enemies. So this thing's gotten really personal and really ugly, and right now I don't see any signs of it stopping or these guys letting up. Like, I doubt Perkins is going to ease up. You know Kyrie is not going to stop being Kyrie anytime soon. Now I want to be very clear about this too. There is a really important discussion to be had here about this moment in this country, the moment the country is currently in, and the opportunity for real, lasting change. And what role NBA players can have in that change. There's a serious discussion in that. Just as there's a serious debate as to whether or not the role is better with games being played or if games being played distracts from this moment. There's a serious debate in that. That's a legitimate conversation. So there's something to what Kyrie and others are saying, but the fact that Kyrie is involved and doing Kyrie things tends to muddy the waters. It feels like the debate has shifted from the issues that the players who have questions about restarting wanted to discuss, and instead now it's being focused on Kyrie and Kyrie being weird and Kyrie's motivation. Because the fact is, Kyrie is weird. And because that's what always happens when Kyrie is involved in something. And there is another tricky part in this. Kyrie isn't just some guy in the league throwing out ideas and takes on when and how the league returns. He's not just another guy, and he's not just another star player. He's a vice president in the Players Association. So when you're a leader in the Players Association, there's an expectation that you'll be a leader and that disagreements you have with the PA will be kept in-house and not taken public in such a broad manner. It's not that he has to completely agree with everything the Players Association does, but when you're a VP of the Players Association, if you're a member of the executive committee, you don't freelance. You don't go rogue. You don't vote with the association on a phone call and then come out a few days later with a totally different plan. Again, this is not just some famous member of the rank and file doing it. It is a vice president in the Players Association, and it's causing chaos. Then again, when you're a flat earth truther, any argument you make, no matter how valid, is going to be mocked because you think the earth is flat. Like, people can bring new ideas to the table, but if you're a member of the executive committee, you can't flip the table over, and you certainly shouldn't be doing it if you're just bent that they won't invite you to Orlando, allegedly. Then again, I'm not sure anybody can really be surprised here. I mean, this is Kyrie's brand. He causes chaos. His strengths are ball handling and crazy making. Kyrie is absolutely on brand. In fact, all three are. Kyrie's acting weird, his brand. Durant is thin-skinned and jumping into the fray on social. His brand. He can't help himself. And Perk is continuing to thrive in his new position as a member of the Hot Take Factory. Robbie Anderson joins us right now. Robbie, it's great to have you on. Before we get into the offseason and your preparations for the new season, Robbie, how you doing? What have the last few weeks been like for you?
Hello?
Hey, Robbie, what's up? How you doing? Jim Rome with you.
Hey, in and out. How you doing, Jim? Appreciate it. Appreciate the time.
It's great to have you on. So talk to me. What have the last few weeks been like for you? How are you holding up?
I'm holding up pretty good. You know, I honestly, you know, I just been, you know, sitting back, you know, really trying to think, how can I be effective and, you know, collecting my thoughts on things I've seen growing up and, you know, people close to me, and you know I'm mixed, so my mother's white, my father's black, so it's like I've seen, you know, both sides of things, you know, but you know, my mother grew up in middle class, so it's like I've seen both sides of the road in a sense, and you know, just my thoughts on what would make the world become a better place as well.
So, Robbie, what's your sense as you take all this in? And again, you've got an experience I think that a lot of people do not have. As you sit back and you look around and see what's going on in this country right now, what kind of thoughts do you have? Are you optimistic?
I mean, I'm heartbroken, but it's, you know, it's sad that it takes for, you know, it's sad that it takes, you know, people to lose their lives on camera. I feel like for people to really give certain things the respect and the attention that it deserves. And that's what it took for that unity and, you know, things to get the, like I said, the attention they deserve. But I hope that, you know, things do change and, you know, it continues, you know, in a positive direction. And I hope that, you know, nobody else really loses their lives and, you know, things like that over simple things that's just not right.
We've all heard of Casper, you know, the sleep company with outrageously comfortable products at not-so-outrageous prices, from award-winning mattresses to pillows, sheets, and duvets. Casper is transforming the way we sleep, one snooze at a time. And now you can help Dad upgrade to the comfort of Casper with the Father's Day sale. Save 10% on any mattress order or get $25 off when you spend $100 or more on great gifts for Dad through June 23rd. The original mattress provides the support and cooling that you need with the comfort you love. Four layers of premium foam are designed to provide pressure relief for all-night comfort. Keep your back aligned with Zone Support, designed to provide extra support from bedding, bed frames, even a dog bed. Casper has everything you need to complete your dream bedroom. And as always, free shipping and no contact delivery. Offer excludes bundles, the Element mattress, and sale items. Limit one offer per customer and order. Please see casper.com/terms for additional terms and conditions. I agree with you, Robbie, 100%. That's the main thing right now, and that's the main conversation. You know, as we shift back to football, what's it been like for you to be a free agent in the middle of a pandemic?
Yeah, it was strange, you know, like, you know, for instance, signing to the team and, you know, not having the experience of, you know, doing the press conference, you know, holding up the jersey, you know, that's always something I always look forward to. You know, I wasn't drafted, so I didn't have that experience then. And then it's like, you know, now with not even being able to go to the facility, it's weird, but, you know, it's sometimes in life you just got to learn to adapt and adjust.
Panthers wide receiver Robbie Anderson is my guest. Adapt and adjust. I think that's the theme for everybody right now. Signing with the Panthers, though, means reuniting with Matt Rhule, who coached you at Temple. What has he meant to you as a person and a player?
You know, he's a pivotal person, you know, to me, you know, outside of just football. You know, like, I can literally talk to Coach Rhule, like, by anything for hours, you know. And when it comes to football, he understands me as a player. He knows I love football, but he knows my mentality, he knows my capabilities. And there's been a lot of times, like, you know, like people, like a lot of people we go through, or we don't see things that we see in us, that we can't see the things that we truly have within ourselves. And I feel like he knows how to bring out the best in me, and he's done that. You know, he kept me on track. He never gave up on me at times when I kind of gave up on myself, and, you know, means the world to me, and to be reunited with him means a lot.
Robbie Anderson's joining us. Robbie, at the top of the interview, I mentioned the numbers you've put up in recent years. Big numbers as a wide receiver. The point is, you were a cornerback at one point in college. You had been recruited by Steve Adazio. He left to take the job at Boston College. So what was that early time at Temple like for you?
My early time at Temple, it was honestly a little frustrating because, you know, I wasn't playing. Like, I was redshirted, and then my redshirt freshman year, I didn't play too much. So it was frustrating because, you know, my whole life I've always been on the field. I was never on the sideline, and I felt like it was no reason for me not to be on the field early in my career. So it was frustrating because, you know, I love football. I love contributing. I love making plays. Like, I'm a competitor. So it was tough, like, and that's not what I came there to do. I didn't come there, like, my mindset wasn't, I'm going to go to college, I'm a red shirt, I'm going to sit back my second year, and I'm going to watch everybody else. It was frustrating for me.
Panthers wide receiver Robbie Anderson's my guest. So you were frustrated. The story goes, in fact, that you thought about leaving school, but then you spoke with Rhule, and then the idea was you would come back, but you would be a wide receiver. What was it like to make that switch from corner to wide receiver at the D1 level?
It was, you know, honestly, I was more so mad about, I preferred to play cornerback, just because the simple fact of, in football, when you play receiver, you rely on 10 people. When you play corner, you rely on yourself. So that was just the dog in me. I wanted to be in my own element and be able to, like, control my destiny in a sense. So I was frustrated about it, but, you know, it worked out. You know, I played receiver when I first got there, and I moved to corner, and then I moved back to receiver. But I sometimes wish that I would have played corner, but, you know, it's going to work out. I'm going to be a legendary great receiver when it's all said and done.
Robbie Anderson joining us. Yeah, there's something to be said right about being on that island. Guys do love that. Guys thrive in that. But you've turned it around, and you're playing on the other side and putting up those big numbers. Also, one of the things you've said about Rhule is, quote, winning is in his blood. Like, how does that show up in him as a coach and then the entire team? For instance, what is it about him that's so unique, that makes him so special as a coach?
He can talk to you. A lot of coaches, like, can only talk football with you. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot different when you – a lot of times in this business, everybody has to realize it's a business, you know, but I think with him, it's deeper than just that. You know, a lot of times coaches, they coach you to, you know, obviously win championships, and then it's on to the next. It's not really – like, I can honestly say with him, it's obviously about that. That's the goal, but – it's not about that with you as a person. And he gives people chances. Like, he's an understanding person. Like, a lot of coaches aren't, like, they're kind of don't act like human beings from what I've experienced.
Robbie Anderson, my guest. Yeah, I mean, it's one thing, right, to say, hey, man, I really care about you. But players know, right? They can sniff that out. They know whether or not the coach cares about them. Is that what it comes down to? The guy, like, legitimately cares about the guys he's coaching?
Yeah, and the other thing is, too, it'll be straightforward with you. Like, if he feels like he's not afraid to speak his mind and tell you what it is, but it's from a caring component, you know?
Yeah, I do know. I know exactly what you mean. For instance, man, don't tell me what you think I want to hear. Tell me what I need to hear and just shoot me straight. Like, literally everybody, especially every athlete I know, just wants to be shot straight. Just tell me, man. Tell me how it is, but don't tell me how it's not and then backstab me. Just be straight. We can handle it. So you're going to go to a situation where you're going to be playing with Teddy Bridgewater now as your quarterback. How excited are you about the potential the two of you have?
I'm extremely excited. You know, we've been looking good. You know, we've been working, running routes, and going through our plays, and the chemistry is definitely there. The communication is definitely there. So, you know, I'm excited because I feel like he's gonna prove everything that he's working to prove, and you know, it's gonna show for itself.
Robbie Anderson's my guest. Now, you wore a Christian McCaffrey jersey to your virtual press conference. When you start to look at that offense now and you see the weapons, you, McCaffrey, Bridgewater, DJ Moore, all playing in a Joe Brady offense, how good can this offense be this season?
I think we're really one of the most slept on offenses, but I think that we can be one of the most explosive offenses in the NFL. Like, I think we have that capability. It just, you know, it's going to take us to do what we need to do, but I definitely think that that's our ceiling. I think we can definitely be one of the most explosive offenses, but, you know, at the same time, one of the most underrated offenses.
So, Robin, leave me with this thought. You were undrafted out of Temple. You put up all these huge numbers. When you have the career that you're having so far, is there any part of you that wants to say to everybody else, how do you all like me now? Now what do you all have to say?
Yeah, definitely. But I just know, for me, I feel like I was just telling my trainer yesterday, like, I feel better than I did my rookie year. Like, I feel my offseason has been one of my best offseasons training and, you know, finding new components and new ways to better myself. So, you know, I just feel like there's a lot more for me to prove, and I haven't even, you know, opened that door yet.
We are joined by Eric Orszay. Eric, it's really nice to have you on the program. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. It's good to have you. Listen, it's been a couple of weeks, or I should say a couple of days, since you've been drafted. What have the last few days been like for you and your family?
Oh, they've been pretty chaotic, but they've been amazing. Just constant running around, having people stop by, congratulate me, and constant phone calls and text messages. But it's been awesome. It's been really exciting.
I mean, Eric, your story really is amazing, and we'll get into it in a minute. But if you were to take me back, when did you first start playing baseball, and what was it about the game that you liked so much?
I've been playing baseball since as early as I can remember. I mean, since I was old enough to pretty much walk, I believe I've been playing. And just the passion for the game really came from my dad. Just always, he grew up playing and he loved it, and he kind of shared that love of the game with me. And just the everything about it, I really enjoyed, and just the competitive nature of it. And for me, it was always the pitching side of it that I always loved. Whatever it was about getting guys out on the mound, I just absolutely fell in love with.
Eric Orsi is joining us. So you played your high school ball at Glenbard North in Illinois. Then you went to Northwest Florida State. So at that point, what was your plan and what kind of hopes did you have for a baseball future?
I just wanted to play at the next level, whether that be Division One or, you know, professional baseball, obviously. I'd worked pretty hard my whole life to try and get to that level, and I started realizing that I had a talent and an ability that would allow me to get to that next level, and obviously enjoying the game as much as I did growing up, and continuing to be given the opportunity to play at that next level was something I could never even dream of having in front of me. So, I mean, it just means the world to me that it's actually here, and this opportunity was even given to me in the first place.
Especially given what you've been through. He was a fifth-round draft pick of the Mets in this year's draft. Eric Orsi is my guest. So just to continue with that story, though, you transferred to the University of New Orleans, and then in 2018, you were dealing with some groin pain. The story goes that initially you thought it might have been from doing some extra work as a catcher, and then you fight through it, you keep battling, but then one morning you wake up and you're in agony. What do you remember about that particular morning?
Not being able to move or really breathe too well. That was it was pretty scary. It was about 4:30 in the morning, and I mean, I'm normally a pretty heavy sleeper, so the fact that I was up was kind of already a red flag. And then obviously once I tried to get up and move around a little bit and was struggling with pain, I knew something was wrong. Obviously at that point go to the hospital and had some tests done and find out being diagnosed with cancer. That was something at 21 years old you never really expect to hear, but I mean, honestly, for the most part, pretty much once I was diagnosed, it took me a couple hours to get over it. I shared it with my family, and by the time my coaches had showed up to the hospital and were kind of asking how everything was going, I was ready to get it over with and get the surgeries done and take the first couple steps at putting it behind me.
I mean, there's so much in that answer that's amazing to me, Eric. For instance, as you point out, I mean, you're a young athlete. You're a Division I college athlete. You're in great shape. You're young. I mean, what goes through your mind when you're told that you have testicular cancer? Did that even register when you first heard that?
Honestly, not at all. I tell people this all the time. I actually laughed at the doctor when he said I had cancer because I didn't think it was even an option. So that those first, like, probably I would say 5 minutes, it hadn't really sunk in. And then I just remember... we started talking about treatments and what the next step was to get rid of it. And I remember looking down at my hands and they just started shaking a little bit. And I could just feel that emotion start to come over my body. And I knew I was about to lose it. I cried like a baby for probably the next, probably hour almost. So that was a couple moments I'll never forget. Specifically, though, I remember looking down at my right hand, and it just started shaking. I was like, "Uh-oh, I'm about to just lose it right here."
Eric Orsi is joining us. Eric, the other thing is too, like, you didn't have family with you when you got that message. In fact, you were the one who had to call your mom and tell her the news. What was that telephone call like?
That was definitely probably the hardest thing I've had to do. That was, knowing, especially being away from home and. My mom is very, very protective, as most moms are. I knew it was going to be tough for her to hear, so that phone call was very difficult. And she knew something was wrong as well from the beginning. She knew the number was not mine, and she knew it wasn't the coach's numbers, and it wasn't a number from the school. She kind of got that feeling. You know, that tone kind of starts from the second night she answers the phone and says, you know, hello, and I'm saying, hey, it's your son. You know, it's Eric. And from the get-go, she could kind of just tell from my voice that something was wrong, and that just made it that much harder. I was trying to hold back the emotions just for her sake more than anything, but obviously those emotions kind of came through on the phone call, and you can kind of hear her. She didn't really know how to react. I know she, after I had told her for the first time that I had cancer, she actually was like, you know what, I need to go find your father because he works 10 minutes down the road, and I don't know what to do right now. I'll call you back in 10 minutes when I find your father. So she actually drove over to his work, and they called me back. And then I obviously shared that with both of them. And that was a pretty emotional phone call.
pitcher Eric Orsi is joining us. I mean, the whole thing is just terrifying. So at what point did you start your thinking? When did it shift from the shock of the news to determining, all right, this is what this is. What are we going to do about it? How are we going to beat this thing? When did you start to get leverage on this?
I mean, it was probably a couple hours after they had told me.
Wow.
Like I said, my coaches were on their way to the hospital, and by the time they showed up, it had been, I would probably say, an hour or two since I had been diagnosed, and they'd run all the tests and all that. And by the time they showed up, they walked through the door and were like, "Hey, how's it going? Like, how you doing?" And just seeing their faces, it was kind of like, you know what? Like, I'm good. I'm actually, as good as I can be. Obviously, not good, but as good as I can be. I'm ready to kind of tackle this obstacle head on, and let's get this out of me.
So you start to go about doing that. You have surgery, but then you ask your coach, Blake Dean, if you could travel with the team to the Southland Conference baseball tourney. I mean, at that point, Eric, you were still having trouble walking to a certain extent. Why was it so important for you to be with your team?
For me, it was just the brotherhood that we had that year, and we had a really good group of guys, and we were kind of on a roll that last little bit of the year. We were really just on a mission. We started out that year pretty poorly. And we were just coming in hot at the end, making that playoff push to really get in there. And I didn't want to be the reason that people got distracted and we didn't end up making it. So I wanted to make it about the team and make sure that I was there for the guys. And they supported me a ton, and we almost kind of rallied around the fact that I wasn't going to be able to play the rest of the year and help us out. And We made a good little run right there. We made it to the championship game of that tournament. And on top of that as well, it was somewhat of a distraction for me. I mean, baseball has always been, what I fall back on when life's hard or when I'm struggling with something in life. Baseball had always been there to kind of take my mind off of it and just allowed me to enjoy whatever part of life I was going through. So, it was amazing that Coach Dean even allowed me to go, and I really appreciated all the brotherhood and all the support from the guys.
See, Eric, I want to be respectful of your time, but I just want to mention this as well, and I should normally spend more time on this, but the fact is there was a mole on your back, tests are run, and then you're diagnosed with skin cancer, so then it's a second diagnosis, but in the middle of this, you continue to battle, you continue to work, you're putting the time in. As you were working your way back into baseball, was it fairly smooth, or was it all just a grind?
It was a little bit of both. I mean, for me, I'd always worked pretty hard, I felt like, so the work ethic part of it was always there for me. So once I was cleared to start moving around and working out and doing all that, I didn't find it too difficult to get back into it. I mean, obviously the recovery time that my body had been so beat up that one workout felt like I had, worked out for a week straight without stopping. So the recovery time after workouts or throwing or any of that was obviously a little bit harder. But I mean, for the most part, everybody was there to support me, and anything I needed, any kind of help I needed, any treatment I needed, there was always somebody there willing to help, and it made it a lot easier for me. I know the physical toll on my body, like I said, the recovery time was probably a little bit longer, but for the most part, anything I needed, any help I needed, any treatment I needed, there was always somebody there just waiting to help out, and I mean, that meant the world to me.
Eric Orsi is joining us for a few more moments. So you fight all the way back. You make it back to the mound in the season opener against Southern. You pitch an inning and two-thirds. You fight through that. Then against Arkansas State, you go five innings. You strike out seven. You get your first win since beating cancer. What did that moment feel like?
Honestly, it kind of came and went really quick. I didn't even really pay attention to the fact that had been my first win at the Division I level, and I hadn't even really paid attention that was the first win since I had been back since cancer. At that point, it was just an excitement to be back in the game, and we had a good ball club this year. Obviously, without COVID, I think we're making a pretty good run this year, and I think we're one of the top teams in the Southland. So that was more of our focus this year was, you know what, I want this to be my last year of college ball. I want to go out on top, and I want to have a good season. And we had a great group of guys to do that. So the focus really wasn't on those individual moments for me. It was about just doing everything I could to help the team win and see how successful we could be this year.
Really importantly, you said something amazing also. Quote, "It sounds crazy and it sounds bizarre, but cancer was a blessing in disguise for sure." End quote. It's a really powerful statement. What do you mean by that?
It just kind of opened my eyes to what's really important in life and what I wanted to do. It helped me realize that, I feel like I'm a good person, but I wasn't necessarily the exact person I wanted to be. And the same thing with baseball. I was a good baseball player, but I wasn't the elite, great guy that I wanted to be in terms of baseball either. So it kind of just opened my eyes to the fact that I needed to improve myself both on and off the field. Just kind of relit that fire inside me saying, you know what, if you really want to play at the next level and you really want to do this as a profession and you want to do this as a job, you really got to dive into it, learn more, work harder, and push other people around you. And as long as you continue to do that, you keep your nose to the ground and keep working, that opportunity will be there at some point.
Eric Orsi, it's an absolutely amazing story. Former University of New Orleans pitcher, drafted by the New York Mets in the fifth round of this year's draft. Eric, there's no way to do justice to your journey and your story, but I really appreciate you taking time, and we're doing the best we can with it. I mean, that is an amazing story, and you're an amazing young man. I really appreciate having you on the show. We'll all be watching to see how it plays out, and nice to talk to you.
Thank you very much, Jim. I appreciate it.
So when I was a kid growing up, one of my favorite things ever was to get up in the morning, grab that sports page, and smash some breakfast cereal. Cereal was so good, right? But then as I get older, I come to realize why I thought it was so good. Because it's all sugar. And as I get older, I realize I am what I eat, and I need to fuel my body properly, and that's not a good way to start the morning with a bowl full of sugar. Thankfully, my pals at Magic Spoon have picked me up. Here's the difference. With Magic Spoon, zero sugar, 12 grams of protein, and only 3 net grams of carbs in every serving. And it comes in 4 flavors, cocoa, fruity, frosted, and blueberry. And it tastes amazing. In fact, really, it tastes too good to be true. It's keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, low-carb, and GMO-free. And if you're saying to me, hey, Rome, what's your favorite of the four? Frosted. All day long, frosted. What you want to do is go to magicspoon.com/Rome. Grab a variety pack, try it today, and be sure to use our promo code Rome at checkout to get free shipping. Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. That's magicspoon.com/Rome. Use the code Rome for free shipping. Magicspoon.com. It is great to have them on this podcast. Beaks on Smack Off Eve. What's going on, Beaks? How are you?
Good, man. How you doing?
Great.
So, based on what happened at Hennessy's last year, you now apparently win more than the 5K. You get a drunken Fabian leaping on top of your shoulders, along with Lewis and Palmdale's bionic leg. So have fun with that, guys. And then so recently, Mark in Boston gave me some advice about going back home. Mark, I just wish I could give you some advice about repeating as a smack off champ, but out of the 1,000 times you've smacked off, you've never won, Schlep Rock. So, Jim, last year I had a Who Wants to Not Walk with Jeff and Richmond list. This year I have one addition, but it's a Who Wants to Walk on Jeff and Richmond. And the answer is, any pro wrestlers that need a mat. Now, moving on to Jeff in Southfield, I just have a question. If I got cast as Jabba's in Star Wars, does that mean that Bella B is the Rancor in the pit? Unwar, any rookie tips Jerome in Houston has been giving out? Hey, Jerome, I have a tip for you. It's
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Beaks. Man, you are the train wreck that I cannot take my eyes off of. It is the day before the day. It's Smack Off Eve. Fabian, how are you?
Good morning, bro. Honestly, good thing that dude from Canada called or something, because I couldn't stop laughing. I don't know why, because I was hearing the program, I think, or something like that. Yeah, my stomach kind of hurts a little bit. Sad, I'm done, bro. Sad. Okay, so anyways, the purpose of the call, I guess... You know what?
What?
I think Steve Stugnut, he has got to be the biggest clone. Really? Oh, man, I lost my thought, man. I want to take a puff and the drinking and the whole deal. Bro, one thing. Tomorrow my money's still... I ain't got no money, by the way. So, we got a problem, Houston. So, my money's still on Brad, eh? You know, and let me know who the, you know, where to go for I could go hang around. Like, so, hey, happy, did I already say, you know, like when it's like New Year's Eve or whatever, smack off Eve, although it's the morning, right? Dude, I think I'm going to have to go puff. I want to say that Hanstrom, Bacon, and Pooldog, and Steve Stugnut, they're the best in the business. Tonight, listen to the program. I think tonight is the pre one. And then after, like tomorrow, after midday, whatever, sas, I promise I'm going to be bugging those cats too, man. And I hope Rich fucking gives me a call.
Hey, Fabian.
No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call.
All right, so I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing.
Not a very good call.
But I know it's a thing. The thing being, you can't get that anywhere else but here. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. And who doesn't? However, I've got a feeling, based on this guy's track record, I know his skill set, I think he's going to be a factor tomorrow. We go to Benny in Wisco. Benny, it's the day out. How do you feel?
I feel good, man. You know, there have been a lot of good times that I've had calling this show, but I think hearing Fabian just drop an F-bomb live on hold might be my favorite. That was absolutely incredible. But, you know what's not incredible is this little back and forth between Lef and Brad. Lef poking the bear and Brad calling Lef gimmicky. Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, but haven't we heard this before, like for the past 5 years straight? I mean, can you guys just turn the page already? This pillow fight is the radio version of Teen Wolf 2. Mike and Indy and Chael Sonnen think that Lef v. Brad is a sequel that nobody asked for. With the exception of the person holding the bucket underneath Rick and Buffalo's beehole during his call tomorrow, nobody has time for that crap. Now, Jim, yeah, I'm really pumped for tomorrow. I'll be there. And I'm going to let my competition take care of the tactical errors this time around. And based on what I've heard or not heard from the rest of the field, it's going to be an easy job. Easier than Rick and Buffalo's teaching job once the pandemic hit. And even easier a job than the guy who tested Owen Wilson and Patrick Ewing for COVID. I mean, did that guy just stand 6 feet away and light a match and say, oh, yeah, you guys got it. 2 weeks isolation, bud. Thanks, Jim. I cannot wait to crush some skulls tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Benny. Rack him. That's a strong RSVP. He is Dan Wojcicki. Dan, good to have you back. Dan, how are you and what has spring been like without the NBA playoffs for you?
It's been a lot of time at home with you know, we're lucky to have a very young son, so that's been good. It's been good time with I know Bea Arthur has appreciated having me around, my dog, Jim, not the actual actress Bea Arthur.
Right.
So, you know, just kind of sitting around doing some reading and then trying to, like, track down as much of this NBA stuff as it's kind of slowly trickled out over the course of 3 months and then earlier this week, it was sort of the floodgates of it all, and we got to finally see what the plan is.
Dan, speaking of reading, some light reading, the league unveiled its plan to return to play in Orlando, and they dropped nearly 150 pages worth of documents on policies and procedures for that return. You have a piece in the LA Times breaking it all down. What was your overall reaction upon reading that document?
It's very thorough, and it's as thorough, I think, as I think that was sort of the idea, right, is that this is obviously a scary time in terms of the pandemic still. Cases are on the rise in Florida, in the county where the NBA is going to be. And I think it was incumbent on the league, and they've said from the beginning that this was going to be a important thing to them. Like, I mean, that player health and safety was number one. And obviously there's so many financial considerations to this, but they needed to kind of, I think, put some people at ease and say, look, this is how thorough we're going to be. I mean, like, you know, at times it was pretty easy to mock, and some of it was pretty comical. Like, you know, when you have the recipe in there to, this is how you disinfect a basketball, you know, or, you know, you learn that, you know, decks of cards are going to be single use only, but don't worry, there'll be plenty of them. Like, you know, we've got the bicycle people on speed dial. We'll be able to get you as many decks of cards as you need. I think it just kind of speaks to just the level of sort of detail that they've already gone through. And I think the thing that makes me most confident is that I think the NBA has shown a tremendous amount of adaptability. And I think the policies, those 150 pages are, you know, certainly going to be adjusted as more information becomes available, and it's in the documents that's certainly the case, that these are the policies for day one. And after that, we'll see what happens.
We're talking to Dan Wojcie. So, Dan, what's your sense as to how the players will respond to some of the restrictions, especially those related to wearing a smart band and guests?
Yeah, I mean, I think those are kind of the especially for people who are entering free agency, like that's the type of stuff that's a little like Big Brother-y, where you don't want, you know, certain medical data shared, certainly not like blood work and stuff like that. As teams and their sports science departments have gotten smarter and smarter about certain things like that, that, you know, I think there's a healthy fear. And it's probably warranted that teams would use that stuff against players in negotiations, you know, that, you know, Montrezl Harrell, your blood oxygen levels aren't as high as, you know, as someone I would want. And that means that as you get older, your effort levels are going to decrease. And so we're not going to offer you a 4-year contract, stuff like that, Jim. Right. So I do think that ultimately, like, the people that go to Orlando for this are going to be making sacrifices. And that might just be one of them, right? Is that, like, this is something we're going to do. Like, I don't really want to wear a Magic band. I don't want the NBA, even though they say they don't know exactly where I'm at all times. Like, you know, it's plausible. Like, you might just have to kind of put some of those worries in the back of your mind and say, like, look, we're here because we want to get paid. We're here because we think it's important to finish the season. These are just kind of the costs of doing business right now at a time like this.
Dan Wojcie writes for the Los Angeles Times. He joins us once again. Dan, I think my favorite detail of the entire document was that anonymous hotline that is available for reporting violations of procedures. I love the possibility of guys narking each other out, ratting each other out. It makes me laugh. But in reality, do you think that'll actually happen, or will guys not really be monitoring each other like that?
I don't get the sense that people are going to be monitoring it like that intently, just because, like, as a general rule, when you deal with, you know, athletes and at their athletic primes, it's like, you know, there is a certain level of invincibility that comes with this. And so, you know, it'd be like, I don't imagine James Harden picking up the phone and saying, you know, I watched the Orlando Magic playing cards and they were sitting 4 feet apart instead of 6 feet apart. Like, I don't imagine that, right? Like, I think now if there was egregious stuff and you know, and it was stuff that made people feel unsafe, I think that's a possibility. But I don't know. I like to imagine that, I like to imagine sort of the possibilities of it as sort of a competitive advantage, right?
Where, yes.
Like the night before a game, you know what I mean, maybe before the NBA Finals, you have LeBron calling on Giannis and saying, well, you know, I just saw three women walk into Giannis's room. I don't think they're supposed to be there. You should go check this out.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or you order him some Postmates or something like that, that he's some illicit Postmates. Like, I think the possibilities like that are kind of funny. But for the most part, I think, look, right, like, this is going to be an honor system thing. Like, just like a lot of this is in society, is sort of, you know, I think maybe one area where you can see people is like sort of the bedrocks of their plan, Jim, are be outside, be apart, and wear a mask. Right, like, those are sort of the general things, and I think if you saw people, like, egregiously disregarding some of those things, maybe somebody would pick up the phone and call. But I think it would come from a team official first, right? Like, it wouldn't be another player. It doesn't seem like that's in anybody's interest, unless they can get Chris Paul a free throw. Then maybe it'll happen.
I was gonna say, yeah, maybe you don't see James Harden doing it, but I can see Chris Paul doing it. And I hate to say it, Dan, I think that you're right. But I'm going to hope that they make use of that anonymous hotline, because then, to your point, if somebody uses that to gain a competitive advantage, we don't have to worry about them hanging an asterisk on that win. You can just put a giant rat next to that instead of an asterisk, which I think would be pretty cool. Now, on a much more serious note, Dan, alongside the discussion of protocols is the discussion for certain players about whether or not to play at all, and whether or not playing would be a distraction from the moment at hand. What's been your reaction to how that conversation has played out?
You know, I used the word healthy before. I think it's been a healthy conversation, because I do think those players are right. Like, this will, at least in some fashion, distract. There is such a tremendous appetite for sports. I don't know, Jim, if you saw, like, the golf ratings from this weekend, right?
Yes.
We're, like, through the roof. You know, I saw, like, 89% above last year. And that's, I mean, that's for golf, right? And I think, you know, for the NBA, particularly the NBA playoffs, in a year like this, there's going to be tremendous interest. I think they're expecting very big TV numbers. And, you know, on one hand, yeah, that's an opportunity to use a platform and to, whether it's a jersey patch or PSAs or whatever it is that the NBA decides to do. But, you know, like that, the NBA has done stuff like that before, and maybe it hasn't been enough. So it's going to be a very personal decision. I can say this, in conversations with players that I've had over the past couple of weeks, like in terms of the guys who don't want to go, if you could split that up kind of into a pie chart, the biggest slice is people who are concerned about, you know, detracting from sort of the movement right now against, you know, social injustices, racism, and police brutality. Like they don't, people don't want to be a part. People want to be a part of that solution. They don't want to be a part of the problem. I think the second biggest sort of thing is what we've talked about in terms of just the overall level of like restriction. You know, that's the second biggest thing that people are worried about, and sort of, you know, contracting and dealing with the coronavirus is probably third, to be honest. That's probably the smallest of the three.
So Dan, what about that? Like, for instance, well, they don't want you to call it a bubble. They want to refer to it as a campus, but how much movement in and out of the campus do you expect there to be?
For players?
Yes.
Almost none.
Yeah.
Almost none. You know, I think there were, obviously there are situations like, you know, the inside the documents, they're going to build essentially sort of like, I hate to call it like a field hospital, but you know, a facility that has X-ray and MRI machines, but like, let's say you have to have some other sort of image testing or something like that done. Like you might end up at a hospital. You might end up at like sort of a medical facility of some kind. You know, I think players, obviously, certainly if someone's ill or something like that, the NBA is offering provisions like if a player had a death in the family or even if they're like, you know, someone's sister was getting married and because the schedule is shifted that, you know, there are circumstances in which you could get approval. But that approval is going to come with a cost, right? Like you're going to have to, when you come back, you're going to have to do 4 more days of quarantine. You know, and then if you go out without permission, like that goes to 10 days, you know? And I think like the thought process of just like going into a hotel room and as someone who spends a lot of time in hotel rooms, like sitting alone in a hotel room for 7 days, there's not a lot of, like, you can't really like spread your wings and fly in there. Right, Jim? Like there's only so much you can do.
Right.
You know, and I think that to me would be a disincentivizer to like, you know, a night out on the town, like knowing that that's the cost. Right. So there won't be very much movement. Now, I think what's kind of interesting is that there will be, you know, multiple tiers of people there. Right. Like, so you'll have some media that'll be inside who will be very restricted, even more probably so than the players. Then I think, though, there will be kind of like, you know, as team owners come through, it'll be like they won't have any access, right? Like they'll be out kind of walking around sort of with like the media that's outside of the bubble, not being tested daily. There'll be some in and out for those people, but none of those people are going to have direct contact with players. The media in the bubble is probably not going to have very much direct contact with players.
Dan Warkey's my guest. Dan, so before I let you go, let me ask you about a team or two. As an example, you can imagine mentally how challenging this would be. The Lakers have already been through an extremely mentally and emotionally exhausting season, both because of their time in China and then the death of Kobe Bryant. What's your sense of their mental toughness as a group right now?
Yeah, I mean, they've been probably tested the most out of anybody in the league this year in terms of just like dealing with chaos and having to adapt, and they've come through it pretty strong so far. But I'm a believer in limits, and especially emotional limits. Like I've seen it throughout the years covering the Clippers and covering other teams where, you know, you can push and push and push a team, and then eventually it's just too much and it just kind of falls apart. I'm not saying that that's going to happen to the Lakers in this situation, but like we are seeing, you know, you've got Dwight Howard and Avery Bradley who aren't sure exactly what they want to do. LeBron is obviously, you know, is laser focused on a title and stuff like that. And I think, you know, they're going to be tested mentally. I have a story. It's online now. It'll be in the paper this weekend where, you know, I talked to one executive who thinks like the biggest thing there, even maybe outweighing talent, is just going to be like, how tough are you mentally? And I do think that the Lakers have been tested that way. I will say this, Jim. During the course of the season, it was a very close team, a team that enjoyed being around each other. You know, and I think that's gonna really matter in Orlando. How much you like one another, because you're not gonna be able to go home. You know what I mean? And see your friends or do any of that other stuff. Like, if you want to have some sort of like outside basketball activity, you're doing it with a teammate. So you better get along. And I think that does bode pretty well for the Lakers, but it is a team that has definitely been tested throughout the year a number of different ways. And, you know, kind of all of those seem sort of small potatoes compared to this.
Right. And then one final thought. What about the format? How does it relate or what does it mean for the Clippers?
Well, I think, you know, I think it's a pretty favorable thing for the Clippers in general. I mean, they've got a lot of talent, which is going to matter. They have really good depth, which is going to matter. There aren't very many teams that could, like, conceivably say, like, if our second player were to go down with, you know, God forbid, coronavirus or something like that, and you lose that person for 10 days, like, what do we do? Well, like, the Clippers did that for most of the season without Paul George. You know what I mean? Like, they've shown the ability to win different kinds of ways, and I think that's very important in this situation. They have not been as close as the Lakers as a team throughout the year, so that'll be interesting to watch. But, you know, I think having it be an extended playoff format and having it be, like, not three-game series, not five-game series, just having it be normal, like, the Clippers were built for the playoffs all year. Like, that was the plan, right? That is why they dealt with the load management sort of backlash. It's why, you know, some of the guys that are used to playing kind of all out on a nightly basis didn't really react super well to that plan early in the year. Guys like Pat Beverly and stuff like that who are like, you know, 1,000 miles per hour always, like, having them kind of calm down and say, like, take the long view, like, that was hard for them. And I think that they kind of seemed to round into that as the season went on, Jim. And to me, having it be like a real playoff is going to matter. And the other thing, little sneakily, that'll matter for them is if they do play the Lakers in the playoffs, you know, we both know what Staples Center would have looked like for that series. And it wouldn't have been a lot of Clipper fans. And I think the ability to take that series and put it into, like, this sort of weird sanitized arena environment, devoid of a bunch of Laker fans, I think, like, I mean, that's certainly probably, it doesn't hurt the Clippers. I feel pretty strongly about that. It might even help them.
Team making noise! Yeah! Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. Welcome to Smack Off Week.
The Smack Off.
This weekend wasn't just about Bryson and the return of golf. It was about the return of Daniel Berger. Yeah! He had this birdie at 18 to tie for the lead.
Oh. Birdie at 18.
My man, Colin Morikawa, had a chance to win it on 18.
Oh, no.
Truly a brutal way for Morikawa to lose, but a well-deserved win for Berger.
Unbelievable.
So here's the deal, Brad. I'm giving you a choice. I have a hilarious cameo ready to roll to punk your ass on Friday, but should I use it? That's up to you, dude. You pick your poison.
Les, just bring the other guy in, dude. We know you can't handle this on your own, okay? Les is so gimmicky. He bought her a Rick in Buffalo for Mother's Day. I'm trying to say dildo, Jim.
He is Dino Babers.
I said, I want you to be like the guy that was driving the Ford in Ford versus Ferrari. The perfect game, the perfect throw.
Had he seen that movie?
I made sure he saw that movie.
Right. Good.
You're better off pouring gasoline on your body, lighting a match, and then trying to run through hell to cool off than to mess with a guy like me.
One of the Dallas Cowboys who tested positive for COVID-19 is Ezekiel Elliott. They haven't even had the chance to expose each other to the illness, and yet multiple players already have it. In other words, you might be tired of COVID-19, but COVID-19 is not tired of you. It's Aquarius Ware is my guest.
Never give up. Don't listen to what anybody say and try to put you down. You have to remove people like that out your life to get where you have to go.
James in Detroit. Hey, James. How are you?
Hey, Jim. It's James in the deep.
If I let that go, then I have to say to you, right, this is Van Smack in the box.
You won't regret it, Jim. I won't choke. I won't bomb. Plus, I want to see my name on sucknut.com. So, Jim, please let me in.
Sonny, you made it to the end of your phone call. You didn't get run. David, Bakhtiari, do you feel like your game gets the respect that it deserves around the league?
You want me to be political or do you want me to answer how I feel?
Answer how you feel, big dog. That's how we do it around here.
I mean, if you don't, I mean, I guess that's just your loss at the end of the day if you don't want to appreciate what I'm doing out there.
Caleb is going to make an excellent stepdad someday. The kids will love him because they know he never wrestled with mom. And mom will love it because she can leave the kids with Caleb while she goes out and wrestles.
What a great detail. A tip line. A narc line. Bruh. A rat line. A snitch line. The Chris Paul line. I mean, getting guys to rat each other out is going to be truly special. JT.
And for all the contestants, get your head in gear. If you don't win this contest, it doesn't matter. Second, third, fifth, 19th means nothing. Win or go home a loser.
Stucknut. Stucknut. Brother, what's going on? How you doing?
Finally.
You did it, dude. You're on the air. How's it feel?
You're right, man. I was nervous before, but even worse now.
DJ Reader is my guest. Are you more of a sugar guy or a salt guy?
I'm definitely more of a sugar guy.
Bench the salt.
It's like in spurts, and that's the worst part about it. I get a little taste of it, and I go crazy.
Go crazy now!
Rome is going to bring it to knees. The clones want to still...
Ah. Bizarre as he ever was. Some kind of brand, right? Some middle-aged guy calling another middle-aged guy who hosts a sports talk show and just sings songs.
I really appreciate all the time you've given me and allows me to share my time and career with your fans. Thank you again, buddy, for being so nice to me and so great with your platform. I appreciate it.
My luxury sled, sparkling clean. Jeffrey, the Benz is older than the cow manure. Jerome from Houston has caked on his cowboy boots, bro. Get at me anytime and we can compare luxury sleds. I can show you what a new one looks like, you self-promoting ass clown.
Condescending, selfish smacker that I am.
The final arbiter as to whether or not you get on the air is the guy who made this telephone call, basically.
Basically.
Out of the 1,000 times you've smacked off, you've never won, Sleprock.
You have the weight of all of Canada on your shoulders.
Sas, I promise I'm going to be bugging those cats too, man. I hope Rich gives me a...
Hearing Fabian just drop an F-bomb live on hold, that was absolutely incredible.
Eric Orsi is joining us. When you're told that you have testicular cancer, did that even register when you first heard that?
Honestly, not at all. I actually laughed at the doctor when he said I had cancer because I didn't think it was even an option. I cried like a baby for probably the next probably hour almost.
100.
I got those butterflies in my stomach and scotch.
Thank you very much for having me on. Big fan.
TTYL Jimmy.
Wiggles Pud.
Global warming.
All right, I appreciate it.
All right, Jim, be good. Happy smack off.
Hashtag smack off.
Good night now! Good night now!